This month on the Backloggery Game Club, playing God with ActRaiser.
Hi, this is Hi Ammo House from the Backloggery.
So put you there.
This headset, I swear to God.
Okay.
I hit buttons on it, and I don't know what they're doing, and I think one's mute, and it's not. And the other one, I don't know. This technology, it's expensive and confusing. But yeah, hi, I'm Sobo. I'm a bear. I don't internet much because it confuses me, as you guys plainly saw.
I'm Drumble from the Backloggery.
I'm Lindis from the Backloggery, of course.
This is actually your second appearance, you know, on here.
No, I don't. MAGFest. It was kind of an unofficial. And, hey, yes. Nobody told me that you guys were going to be recording in my room.
you guys probably know me as the Knight of Knee. A lot of people just call me Knee, so you can call me that. Or you can call me Dan.
Well, I've been playing recently. I kind of been diving back into the early Xbox 360 games. So I'm playing through pretty much a lot of crap, if you could say. I've been doing Rainbow Six Vegas, which is okay, rather infuriating at times, but you know, still enjoyable. And last couple days I've been doing Sleeping Dogs on the PlayStation 3, which is absolute blast for me to play as well.
It almost looks like, I haven't played it, but it looks like the fighting. Did you ever play Shenmue?
I know about it, but no.
It looks very similar to that, where you fight large group of people. Even though Shenmue is like two or three at the same time, but this looks like a group, like a very Batman Arkham City kind of deal.
Yeah, it pretty much is. It's a little bit brighter than Arkham City.
Mm-hmm.
There's weather changes that go on in the game. The way the rain looks is probably very realistic, I would say. But, you know, with it being towards the end of the current gen, you know, they pretty much can pull out anything at this point. But I'm probably about halfway through the game. I'm pretty much trying to play it as slowly as possible and do all the side missions and do all the collectibles that I can find within the time frame. The combat is rather similar to Arkham as far as counter attacks and things like that, but there's not like how in Arkham where you know, if you block everyone, you're able to get like multiple damage multipliers and things like that.
So a big thing I always look at in open world games, it's pretty much open world, right?
Mm-hmm, correct.
Does it have good car wrecks?
No, it really doesn't. There's, that's kind of the thing, like, in the time I've been playing it, I've never really done a car wreck in the game, although I have had the guy hit barriers and things like that. barriers and just.
Does he go flying off and like slide down the
street? Yeah, he'll just fly out of the car, and I would think they would, I don't know, have an achievement or a trophy or something for having him fly like 100 feet in the air, but oh well. I guess that's for the sequel if they ever make it.
Lately, I've been, I don't know, I've been playing a lot of stuff because of my attention span, like bouncing between Guild Wars 2, Ragnarok Online 2, League of Legends. I guess if there was one game I say I've actually concentrated on, it's actually been Final Fantasy IV. Again.
You're doing a master run, right?
It, well, if it turned out to be hard enough to be considered one. I'm trying to go through the game without using money. So, no shops, no inns, no whatever you find. You know, live off the land, pretty much. Whatever you find, that's all you get. So, if you run out of healing potions and your white mage is dead, I'm out of luck.
How's it going so far?
It's easy. But I also know the game to death, and it's the easiest version of the game.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure if I will count it, but there are a couple situations where I've panicked because like against the demon wall in the sealed cave,
he keeps
crushing Rosa, and I only have so many life potions, and right. I'm not trying to grind. I'm not trying to, you know, become overpowered. So I've got a limited number of those for the entire rest of the game, and he keeps killing the only person who can actually resurrect people. That's a problem. Mm. Especially if I get to like the final boss and Rosa drops dead, and it's like, well, that's it. This game, guys. We tried to save the world, we failed.
Sorry. The last dungeon is like a long way to the final boss from the last save point, isn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's gonna be fun.
So you can't stay at inns or anything, right?
Nope. If I find tents and cabins and stuff like that, I'll use them. There are multiple points throughout the game where it's just a little bit of sidetracking, like in the dwarf's castle. They'd have a random pot. It's like, oh, the water of life. Why don't you drink it, boy? And full heal without using an inn. Ah. So I've just been abusing stuff like that, or go into a chocobo forest. There's a white chocobo there. Abuse your white magic. Done is done.
So you can't pay for stuff, but you can like
no.
the full.
No. There are ways to heal yourself, yeah, but you can't. I've been refusing myself to use money. So yeah. I can't buy new equipment. I can't buy items, which trying to shuffle around certain equipment for half the game is a bit tedious.
Mm.
And it makes you think, too. Like, when you first get Kane, like the very beginning of the game, he leaves you. His entire armor set can be used by characters 6 hours down the road. So if you hoard that stuff, you can use it later.
So you just have to fight the last battle that he is with you in, and remove it from him before that.
Yeah. And it's an event battle anyway. You're supposed to lose, so you just strip him naked, and you send him on his way. You're going to leave anyway. Here, I kick you out.
That's pretty rough. Makes you feel kind of bad for him if he wasn't such an ass.
I was about to say, yeah, I'd feel bad for him, but he comes back and he kicks my ass, so whatever, he can deal with it.
So it's pretty crazy though. You've been kind of MMOing it up besides that.
I have an addiction. I like shiny new things that hook me with RPG systems and friends, and I have a problem, Corey. I might need help, but it's fun. What can I say? It's fun.
I mean, how many are you juggling? Three?
Yeah. I mean, I'm not
sure
how long.
Two and a half, or something, maybe?
Two MMOs, one competitive game.
Yeah.
And even then, I don't know how long I'm going to be playing, like, Ragnarok Online 2, because you know how backlogger attention spans go for co-op and competitive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just look at all the other games we've all tried to play together, and just it keeps dying out.
Right.
But, yeah, if it keeps being fun, I'll keep playing it. Why not? They're free.
That's the important thing.
All right.
Exactly.
Free?
Yeah, well, Guild Wars 2, you got to pay for the actual game itself, but there's no monthly subscription fees. The other two don't have any subscription fees whatsoever. They just have in-game stores.
Yeah, the Ragnarok is free on Steam, right? It's free to play.
Yep. It's free to play on Steam. They have an in-game store, and it. I tried understanding it, because a lot of the game, it doesn't really explain itself. It, partially English, partially just, it's weird, for lack of a better term. So I haven't tried buying anything. Like, oh, VIP card, what does that mean? Why is it only for one day? What are the benefits of giving you guys my actual money? You know, it doesn't seem like it's been properly clarified and presented to where you want to give them your money.
Yeah, I remember the first Ragnarok having pretty bad English sometimes.
Oh, it's the same way.
Yeah.
Like, even right down to the font they use and the colors and the how the text doesn't properly wrap in the chat boxes.
Ugh.
It's awful.
That bugged me always.
Did you play the first Ragnarok, Sobo?
Briefly. That was years and years ago on a private server, and I had an absolutely miserable time because the person who invited me told me, oh, we can all play together and I'll bring you into it, but we're going to have to grind you from level 1 to 100 first because we only ever do this world versus world, player versus player thing. So I basically idled for 3.5 hours watching my friend kill all these mobs for me, and then I just quit.
I've been kind of all over the place lately. A lot of no progress games like Minecraft and
how many hours do you think you put into Minecraft at this point?
Oh, that's a question best not answered.
Does it keep track of that?
Not that I know of.
Man, they're really missing the boat. I would love to see some of the numbers.
There is a statistics. Maybe on the Minecraft.net or something. They added in at some point, but I've never looked at it.
So you keep on coming back.
Yeah, it goes in waves. The big thing right now, the latest update, they added these hopper items that you can put in minecarts, and the minecarts will automatically pick up items from chests as they go by. And it reminds me of this toy set I had when I was a kid, where there was like this little automatic train track, and the car would change tops from like dump trucks to bulldozers and push marbles around from bin to bin. And now I'm like building these minecart tracks that are picking up melons at one chest and carrying it over to my main fort and into my depots and stuff. I love it.
Could you take it and like literally make a... like a nice little like Rube Goldberg kind of thing out of it? If you wanted to invest the time.
They've added all kinds of things with like the last update was the Redstone update. So all the little electronic equivalent programming things with pistons and switches and power sources everywhere got a big boost.
Jeez, they're still constantly updating it with new stuff.
Oh yeah, it's pretty crazy.
I guess they're still making crazy money on it. So
yeah,
it's not Notch that's updating it anymore, is it?
No, he got off it like a year ago.
Oh really?
Or so.
Oh. Wow.
Yeah, he's been fiddling with this sci-fi first-person shooter survival thing in space.
Is that the Scrolls game?
No, it's called Tend to the Sea. But he doesn't even know if it's going to come out, if it'll actually turn into a fun game or not.
That's got to be so tough for him, though. I mean, following Minecraft.
Like, in a way, but at the same time, like, Mojang, like, everyone in the company says, like, well, you know, the company can basically live off continued sales of Minecraft for the next who knows how many years now. So, I mean, there's pressure to follow up, but they also just have, like, an easy ride where they can just coast and keep trying.
Do what they want, essentially. Yeah. If they don't like something, they can trash it. And it's no big deal.
Man, that must be a great position to be in.
Seriously.
This past month, I've been also kind of hooked on Guild Wars. But I actually just beat the new Fire Emblem yesterday, which was a great game, probably my game of the year, even though I don't usually name a game of the year, but I love Fire Emblem, and this is, to me, the best one, best entry in the series. So
sometimes, you know, sometimes you just know that nothing's going to top it.
Yeah.
I kind of feel that way about New Tomb Raider for me. But so this, have you played them all the Fire Emblems at this point that have come out in the U.S. at least?
Yes, I've played all of them and beaten all but one. I did not finish Radiant Dawn for the Wii. I mean, I'll probably go back and finish it at some point, but it's just so hard. It just, it was really real drag sometimes.
How many hours did the new one take you?
Well, I could have easily beaten it like in a third of the time that I actually played, but I went and did, you know, all the side quests, and I did a few of the DLC episodes, and I recruited every character I possibly could. So at the end, it was about 115 hours.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it just, it's crazy. You can do all sorts of stuff. Like, there's an overworld map, unlike most of the other games, so you can just pretty much grind however much you want and raise your levels, raise your support levels. That's one of my favorite parts of the game, is how you can kind of develop the relationships between the characters however you want, and hook them up, get them married.
can you hook up whoever you want specifically? Like, is there a way to manipulate it?
Yes and no. It's limited by who actually can have support conversations with each other. The character you create, the avatar, can have conversations with anybody, so you can basically marry whoever you want, as long as they're the opposite gender.
Huh. So they've never done that before, right? They've never done marriages and stuff in the game. So
no.
It takes place marriages over, like, years and years, then.
There's, a time jump in the middle of about 2 years. They have done marriages in other games, but they usually only get married at the end of the game. But in this one, they marry as soon as you hit their last support conversation, which enables you to recruit their kid later.
After the time jump.
Yes, I think so.
So just like the people in this world and that world grow up a lot faster. In addition to having no feet.
Actually,
there's a whole time travel storyline.
Oh, okay. We'll leave it at that. Wait, it's too new. I don't want to spoil it.
Spoilers.
That's cool, though. That's cool. I have it. I definitely want to play it.
Yeah. Have you played a Fire Emblem before?
I haven't.
Oh, well, I think it's a good starting point.
You were probably a Shining Force guy.
I played a little bit of the first one. Actually, you know what? The only Shining Force I really played a lot of is the Sega CD version, which I just remember really liking the music. I don't remember too much about the game itself.
It was strategy RPG, right?
Yeah, well, it's mainly, you know, it's the same kind of deal as Fire Emblem, where have like the kind of zoomed in, like a zoomed out / zoomed in map, where you can individually move the characters and they level up and stuff. I don't even know if they level.
That was a remake of a couple of the Game Gear ones that we never got in America.
You're right. I remember reading about that.
Mm-hmm. Sorry if it takes me a while to run this down.
No, that's okay.
I've been playing on my PC, on Steam, I've been playing Bit Trip Beat. It's only been playing it for a couple days here, but I actually just beat it probably half an hour before jumping into this.
Really? Oh, right. That last level, man, it took me an entire day. I started in the morning, and it took me the entire day.
There is a lot of really tricky stuff in there that you cannot get to until you see it and miss it like 5 times, and you're like, oh, that's the pattern I'm looking for. And even then, you can't get it always. It's really hard to...
How does that control on the PC?
There's... I initially made a comment on my backloggery page when I first played it. I guess to set it up, I have my mouse on my computer set to the highest sensitivity level, and that's what I'm used to, is, you know, my mouse that flies around really fast. And I went in the game, and you can adjust the sensitivity there, and I upped that in-game all the way up, and the paddle still moves slower than the mouse moved on my computer.
Jeez.
And it was really frustrating me, because I'm used to moving, you know, my hand like an inch, and the cursor on screen would move so far, and it wasn't going that far. And everything I've searched for on Google, people complain that the mouse was too sensitive in Bitbeat on the PC. So I thought that was kind of stupid, but I ended up grabbing a different mouse with a higher sensitivity, and then I was able to get the game the way I wanted. And I mean, it's kind of tricky because, you know, I think the original one was on WiiWare, and you could use the Wii remote. And you could, I think, imagine, like, pointing at the screen kind of gives you a little better idea of where you're going to end up when you stop moving, whereas with the mouse, you know, when you're shooting up and down really fast, it's really hard to stop at the right point.
Right.
Erwan, you rock the controller forward and back to move the cursor instead of pointing, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Which I really like, but I know a lot of people say the PC version's better.
Oh, well, in that case, then, yeah, I don't know. Maybe it does control a little easier, because, I don't know, I would think pointing would give you a little more accuracy in what you're doing, but I can see.
It seems like I can't imagine playing it with a mouse, to be honest.
I just started Dragon Quest VIII, I think a week ago, maybe. Not even that far. Like, just finally got the full party. I played a couple other games in the series, but, you know, it's typical Dragon Quest fun, which, you know, it's simple, but there's nothing wrong with it, and it's entertaining, so.
Yeah, I really liked it. The world seems so big in it.
Oh, the overworld? That world map is, like, huge. You start exploring, and it's a great, like, scope for what you want, you know, a world to feel like when you're exploring like that. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I don't have too much to say on that because I'm not really far in. And then the other thing, I've been playing a lot of fighting games, which I've been playing those pretty constantly for a while. But Street Fighter IV has obviously been the big one for me.
Are you on arcade edition at this point?
Yeah. So I play that. I probably... few days a week I'll play that every week, and try and meet up with some people and get some practice in with others. And I actually went to a tournament in Indiana I think like 2 weeks ago. Drove down there for a day to play, and
did you win?
I got third place for
that's
that.
Pretty good.
Nice.
Oh. Yeah.
And the people I lost to, I know, are way better than me, so I was perfectly fine with that. But it was pretty fun. Got to meet some new people there. There were people from, like, Indiana and Chicago area, which I'm not from either of those places, so it's a good experience.
So. Did you build your own arcade stick and stuff?
I bought one of the arcade sticks, I think. They normally run like $150 or something, but I got it on sale a couple years ago for like close to half off, which was pretty good. So
nice.
I haven't done any modding or anything to it.
Would you like to eventually?
I mean, I don't know. I see a lot of people with like custom artwork and stuff, and as long as it's working fine, I think I'm pretty okay. I more just want it for how functional it is. I don't care if it lights up or anything like that, like some people have.
I haven't been playing a lot of games, honestly. The only thing that I've kind of really gotten into lately is the Far Cry 3 Blood Dragon.
Oh, yeah.
it's a lot of fun, and funny, but I kind of wish that they had played it a little bit more straight. I think that it would have been, it's like a homage to like to 80s movies. Did anybody ever see the movie? I just read an article about what inspired it directly. Did anybody ever see the movie Hobo with a Shotgun?
Yes.
Yeah.
Well, that's complete. That's what it would inspire the game. And if you've seen that, you can definitely see where that influence came from.
That kind of surprises me. That felt more like a 70s movie to me than like the 80s action sci-fi kind of thing.
Well, specifically the part that inspired it is the plague in that movie. Because all the enemies are like these robots and they all talk like these synthesized voices. And you can't really understand them. But it sounds funny, and sometimes, you know, you attack them, they're like, oh shit. And they're like, holy crap. And it's really funny. And the guy who does the voice for the main character is voiced by Michael Biehn, who was, he's known for being Kyle Reese in the Terminator, in First Terminator, and Hicks in Aliens.
Mm.
But it's like him doing his best Snake Plissken impression, which doesn't really play that well, I don't think. I kind of wish that he had, like, I think that everything would have been a lot funnier if they had just kind of been really serious about it.
Yeah. I far prefer when stuff like that plays it straight, like you were saying, instead of like, hey, look at me, we're being funny.
Yeah, exactly. And there's times where it's like there's certain things that are kind of funny, but you know, they just like incessantly like put like an extreme amount of like swearing and stuff in there. It just doesn't work a lot of the times for me. But the look of it is a lot of fun. You know, everything is neon colored and there's lasers and everything. And it's really like the soundtrack is unbelievable. And that also comes back to like the people that did some of the music for Hobo with a Shotgun, this group called Power Glove, does like this. All the stuff they do is like 80s style synth rock with like no words or anything to it. And it plays throughout the whole thing. It's pretty amazing. Other than that, I'm getting back into Dragon Quest II. I took like a long break from it. And that's about it. So if we want to go ahead and get into the main topic, which is ActRaiser. Everyone played it, enjoyed it, I'm sure, because it's unbelievable. It's an unbelievable game.
It's pretty fun.
What's everyone's history with the game? Did they just play it for the first time for this, or?
No, actually, I played it probably several years ago, but I did play it this month. When I played it several years ago, I joke about this all the time that I'm probably one of the worst gamers ever because I still have to use Game Genie code to actually have a fighting chance with games. So several years ago I played it and beat it with using the Game Genie. And so what I decided to do this month was actually try to play it without using any Game Genie codes. If the character died during the side-scrolling sections, that was fine. you know, I was just going to take it as it came. So for me, I actually liked it a little bit better without it than with it. So I kind of felt like for me, it except for certain areas, which I'll get into in a second. You know, I thought it was rather enjoyable for the most part, except for that friggin' Manticore boss battle in Bloodpool. Oh my gosh. Y'all know, you know what I'm talking about when I mention that, yeah. But and then, you know, this will probably reveal my age quite a bit, but having grown up in the whole time of Nintendo Power and Game Pro and EGM and all that, I would read about ActRaiser in those magazines, and I had friends I went to school with at the time who talked about playing it as well. So I have a little bit of a history with it, but actually didn't get a chance to play it till very recently.
I think someone gifted it to me a couple of years ago on Virtual Console. And I played the crap out of it and loved it. Then I'm trying to look up when I got it gifted. I started, after I beat it like a year or two ago, when I got it gifted, I started it up again at the start of this year. And I tried going through professional and hated myself for trying to go through professional. Just because it... Well, professional mode, for those who don't know, it completely removes the simulation part, starts you out with max life and no magic, and you're forced to go through every single stage in a row, where all the enemies have more life and do more damage, I think. More damage, but they definitely have more life. And if you get a game over, that's it. You gotta start again.
Ugh, that's awful.
Yeah, so try like some of the bosses, like the giant ant lion in the desert, or the weird Aztec one that floats up in the air and tries to crush you. Trying to do those without Stardust, or trying to do the entire boss rush while meticulously making sure you have enough lives to power through it. It got to the point where I just got so frustrated with it that I booted up an emulator and started using stage-by-stage checkpoints with save states instead of actually having to try and, like, sit there for an hour and grind extra lives. Because I just wanted to get it done. I got it January 2012.
Okay, completed so January. It's pretty recent.
Yeah, pretty recent. Not more than a year and a half. And the normal mode, fantastic. I loved my replay of it. It was so good, because the RTS makes it so addictive, and then you go and the individual levels are spaced out so that it's not as hard and challenging to the player, and it's not as overwhelming, I guess, knowing, oh, I can't get that much hurt this stage, I gotta go to the next stage and gotta conserve all of this and that and try to do perfect, you know. It's like, no, I can pace it, then I can go and I can earthquake an entire island and kill people for fun, and then I can go back and I can do that some more, you know. It was great. So, like, when it came down to it, as a normal mode game, I thought it was great. As a professional mode game, I never want to see it again. Too much stress. Too much stress.
Oh, I rented it back in the day. One of those, I have a thing, I had a thing back then with rentals, where if I beat a game during a rental, I never bought it, no matter how much I liked it.
Yeah.
It seemed like a waste of money.
Yeah, I totally get that.
Yeah, and I regret that now, because I could have played this game so many more times in the intervening year. But yeah, it was probably my first game I ever played that had like any kind of city building or, you know, god elements or anything like that, which I completely love any game that has that kind of thing.
So that love kind of comes directly from this.
Most likely, Age of Empires might have predated it in my experience, but I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, this game has always had a soft spot for me. I didn't actually own it until I rebuilt my Super Nintendo collection.
And that was that one of the first ones you went after?
I don't think so, but I definitely grabbed it the first time I saw it in a used game store.
Well, this was my very first playthrough for the Game Club. Yep. I liked it a lot. I was kind of surprised how simple it was overall for being a god game, mm-hmm. but I thought it was a fun, short little romp, and the music is fantastic.
It really is.
I guess I think of god games as having all these layers of complexity that just didn't seem to be there. Not that it's a bad thing by any means. It was just a surprise.
All right. I remember reading about ActRaiser back in game magazines, you know, back when it came out, and I never knew anyone who played it, so I had kind of forgotten about it until I think it was probably like 10 years ago when I started getting into like finding video game music and stuff. And I heard the soundtrack to this game, and I was like, I, you know, thought it was some amazing music for the Super Nintendo, but it kind of caught my attention, and I like researched it a bit more, and it was on my radar. And then 2 years ago, I think I found a copy of it and picked it up and played through the game then, both on normal and professional mode. So I had played through it prior to this. And then when I played through it here this month, I just did a normal run through, and it really made me question how on earth I ever got through professional mode when I did. Because even on like the normal mode, those bosses are really tough. And
yeah, they can be pretty mean.
I don't know how I managed to do that like 2 years ago when I played through it on professional. But yeah, I just gave it another simple run through just to get some fun out of it and stuff.
Drumble, being a completionist, do you you did the professional mode, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember it being really pretty tough, or did you kind of do it right after you had finished the main game?
I did do it right after I finished the main game. Yeah, it's certainly tough. The bosses, except for a few of them, they all have their patterns that once you learn, if you're patient enough, you can whittle them down pretty well without taking damage. Except for ones like that spinning mandala demon and the crystal dragon. Those guys are just nearly impossible to avoid. But
yeah, that ice dragon one always annoyed me.
Do you think you could do it now? Do you have any desire to go back and do another professional mode run?
I don't know if I have desire. But it could be a fun romp sometimes, maybe.
Straight.
So I played it. A friend of mine got it. And I remember it being the first time where I was blown away by the sound of the music. I mean, it's the first time when it's like there's like an orchestra like playing this. Like from the very first time you boot it up. And you hear that, like the horns or whatever it is, come in, and you're just amazed because I was not like expecting that. Because up at that point, you know, it was practically a Super NES launch game, I think.
Right.
It was launch window for sure. And the only things I had played at that point was Mario World and F-Zero, both which had great music, but they seemed like game music, and this kind of took it to a whole nother level. Like that, game music could be something so much more. But I think I was actually very surprised at how short it is originally, and I'm still like it still feels like it is pretty short, but it's not. I think it's pretty much the perfect length. But yeah.
Felt it was really pretty short too, but
it doesn't wear it out, you know what I mean?
It's definitely not a bad thing, and especially in this day and age when everyone has a million games to play, you know, it's kind of refreshing.
Yeah, and the amount of stuff that it packs into it, It's pretty amazing. Okay, so what does everyone feel about, you know, honestly, up until recently, I thought that everyone was like, oh, the side-scrolling stuff is like the best part. I never realized that people really love The Sims stuff as much as they do. Because I remember when it first came out, everyone said, oh, The Sims stuff's pretty boring, but the side-scrolling stuff is amazing. What are you guys' feeling? Like, do you guys think that The Sims stuff, like, makes the game?
It definitely sets it apart from other games. I actually didn't like the action parts all that much. I'm not really much of, like, an... I wouldn't say platformer, but, like, I don't know, action platformer, like Contra and those sorts of things. I'm not very good at them. So I liked the sim parts better overall, I think.
Well, I mean, I was going to say I'm pretty much in agreement with Lindis on that. Like, I just love the sim part of it. I mean, I grew up playing Age of Empires and SimCity 2000 and games like that. So that really, that part of it really tapped into something for me. Although it's a little bit more simplified compared to those games.
Yeah, I'm kind of in agreement there. The sim part was more interesting. And I actually wrote down a couple notes here about the platforming just so I remember to hit on them. But there were a couple issues with the platforming I had that made it not quite as fun as it could have been. Like, it was a little clunky in how it controlled. Like, when you'd ever jump or attack, there was, like, that brief pause every time, and makes the action not quite as smooth with that sort of thing. And there were a couple places where I think levels weren't as well designed as they could be, like, there were a couple blind jumps you had to make, or an enemy would be placed to knock you back into a hole if you got hit, and then you'd instantly die, and stuff like that. It's, you know, I wish they could have done a little bit better with the level design. Not to say it's bad, but definitely you play through it and you're like, oh, this can get kind of frustrating. But the sim part, while it's really simple, doesn't have really any of those, like, frustrating mechanics where it's like, they kind of messed this one up a little bit, or I wish they had done this differently. It's, you know, everything seems to work pretty well in that.
I love Sims. I love RTS. So actually being able to meticulously min-max my population for every single area and try and, like, squeaky clean and perfect every area, like removing all the desert in Cassandra or melting all the ice. That was really fun because I like doing stuff like that in games like that. You want to make it 100% perfect. And the resulting effect it had on making the platformer part was pretty cool. I mean, it certainly made it easier, but I mean, when it came down to it, I felt like without the sim part, the platforming was kind of plain, kind of not. It wasn't really, like, memorable. You'd make ActRaiser just the platformer part, and it would just get lost amidst all the other Super Nintendo platformers of the day. I mean, it might stand out because of the theme or whatever, but it would have just gotten overshadowed. Or forgotten, like ActRaiser 2.
Oh, ActRaiser 2.
I mean, now, I know Dan said that it didn't feel as completely smooth when you were actually playing as the avatar. Like, there were those brief pauses. You didn't have control over your jumps once you committed towards one. But it still felt simple enough to where what you were presented with right from the get-go is like you had that down. You knew what you were doing. There was no subtle mechanics you had to try and master like in Ninja Gaiden or in Ghosts and Goblins. It just gave you a simple slate and said, go kick ass. And you're like, yeah, okay. And then you got the sim parts and you never wanted to do the platform. Because it was just so much fun to shoot things and to cast earthquakes and to build the best little medieval city because you are God. They must obey.
I guess I'm going to be the odd man out here. Because, like, it. Before I played it again this time, like, I always thought of it as a game where the concept was better than the actual game, and that's still true.
Mm.
as much as I love the game, it's despite its flaws. But from a game design standpoint, the sim part is, it's very fun and engaging, but it's also completely mindless, and there's no possible way to fail or screw it up.
Right, right.
You're just like, well, you're going to build on the entire map. It doesn't matter, really, what order you build on the entire map. You're just kind of mindlessly clearing away trees and swamps and stuff. But it's still so fun for some reason.
Exactly. That's what makes it great. You don't need to have that threat level or that, oh, I might fail thing, just because you're just having fun. Yeah. You know, it's like Harvest Moon. You're gardening. No, turnips. Big deal, right? But there's these little turnip peoples in this analogy that just, you just want to grow them and love them because they help you, and it's just so much fun.
Yeah, it's just, there's so many little things in that make no sense, and I've always wondered, like, what did they want the sim part, like, is this what they want the simulation part to actually be? Is this what they were going for? Or did they have, like, a more complex building thing that they cut out because they couldn't make it work or whatever? And there's, like, all these mechanics that I don't think, like, probably 99% of the people that play ActRaiser have no idea that is going on in The Sims. Like, did you guys know there's a limited number of monsters in the layers that pop out during this part?
Mm-hmm.
Really? You can sit there so you can essentially run out of, like, your magic if you need
to? Yeah, if you hit B when you're hovering over them, it'll tell you there's, like, 120 red demons in this layer still.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's 120, and it would take forever to grind them all out.
Right.
But every time you kill a monster, it's the soul that you free from it flies into your town hall or your temple.
Right.
And that ups your max population. So it's just a back and forth of souls. If someone dies in your village, it makes another monster in the monster layer that will come out and attack you.
Hmm.
So it's just a tug of war, but there's no way to lose the tug of war.
Yeah.
So did you not like the, did you like the side-scrolling portions?
That's the other part of this. Like, thinking back on it, I always remember the side-scrolling is kind of clunky and wooden, as other people were alluding to. But playing it again this time, there was this really simplistic beauty to it, I thought. Yeah. Like, everything from the way your character is drawn and animated, it's just so perfect. It just feels so right.
And he looks really awesome compared to how they made him look in the second one.
Yeah. Like, there's something to be said for the He-Man Angel number two. But, I love that his sword is always perfectly vertical as he's running around.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, the way when you're jumping and you're descending, the sword's, like, wound up behind his head, ready
right,
to break.
Right. To like, like he's going to slash down or something really hard.
Yeah. But, like, the way you can just jump from platform to platform, and it's just this one-frame jumping animation, but it looks so cool, like you're a gazelle bounding across the level. So, yeah, like, this playthrough, I came away with a much higher opinion of the action sections than I remembered.
And it's also maybe because you played the Japanese version this time.
I did.
Which has harder action stages.
What were the differences that you noticed?
A lot of the enemy sprites and the action portions were redrawn or recolored for no discernible reason.
Really? I mean, like, at the time, like, Nintendo was known for censoring a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
There's no real reason here.
Topless Medusa Gorgons running around or anything. It was just demons, and now it's a different looking demon. I mean, the changes that did, I mean, maybe not make sense, but you can, okay, yeah. This is why they did that. There was a few, like, some of the villager emoticons, they pop up when they're scared or whatever. When they die, instead of a skull popping up, there's a little cross icon. And of the temple in Cassandora, the pyramid has an eyeball, the Eye of Providence, on top of it instead of just being a plain temple. There's just a bunch of little tweaks, like platform placement, additional enemies here and there. Like, The one that really threw me off, because I didn't know they changed it until I went back and looked at the U.S. version, when you're fighting that manticore lion beast that's jumping around back and forth, the top platform is extended in the Japanese version, so there's only a little slot you can fall back down through, and that's right over the pit at the very bottom. Aww. So I kept falling through there, down into the pit. Oh. It was like, I don't remember having trouble here before.
I watched some of the stream, but, you know, the text was going too fast. Even if I could have read it, though, it was, I couldn't have stopped to read it. I mean, the only thing I really know of is they actually address him as God instead of just Master, which, of course, that wasn't going to fly with Nintendo of America, so they had to change it.
Which, speaking of that, it's interesting because they do the same thing in Soul Blazer.
Oh, yeah. Well, because it's the same character, isn't it? The Master is the same person in...
I was going to say, it's almost exactly the same game, practically, in story-wise.
Yeah, it seems like it's the same...
premise.
Thematic setup, just with a different genre.
You're just on the ground.
Yeah.
In Soul Blazer, instead of...
Yeah.
What's everyone's impressions of the music?
I like what you said about it being like an orchestra is playing it, because I kind of, in the back of my head, I kind of noticed how layered some of the music was, but I didn't think to make that connection. But that's, I think it takes a lot of creativity for a composer to pull that out from just, you know, beeps and bloops and such.
It's pretty crazy because the composer, Yuzo Koshiro, after this, he kind of went on to do... like more like techno-y kind of sounding stuff.
Streets of Rage music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Did he do ActRaiser before like East 1 and 2 when Streets of Rage game?
He did East 1 and 2 first.
Okay. But he went techno, then did a symphonic bit, and then went back to techno.
Well, East 1 and 2 wasn't really symphonic originally.
It seemed very rockish from...
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
Not the original versions.
Oh, so okay.
They've evolved it into being more rock.
Oh, I gotcha.
Butt rock, if you will, later
on. Good butt rock.
But the music is definitely... I might say it might be the best part about this game.
I think. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, I would object, but it's like one of the best game soundtracks of all time, so I can't object.
So what's everyone else's impressions of the music? What is the music track that sticks with you the most?
One for me is The Birth of the People, which is the theme that plays in the sim area for most of the game. And that's not like as layered as some of the other songs in there, but it's like a really solid composition for that one. What is there? It's got a lot of emotion to it, I think.
The track that always stuck with me is the action stage in Fillmore, the first full on action stage music. Just really sets the whole mood for the game, and it's one of those songs that I always remember, that I'll always remember from playing it as a kid too, and I think it still holds up so well. Sobo, what about you?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I'm actually on YouTube right now looking at the soundtrack to remember which songs were which, and that's the one that pops out the most. Is you just, it gets you, it's pretty typical of Koshiro, you know? He's got that high energy towards it, even though it's a bit more symphonic than his other games, but he gets you right going, like, yeah, you got a sword, go kick some ass, go save the world, that sort of thing, you know? You get going. But the other one I really liked was the Blood Pool and the Cassandora music, where it just feels like it's dramatic, it's loud, it's, you're in a tense situation. I mean, because look at where you are in Blood Pool, you know, like when you're fighting the manticore and stuff. That your tiny little wooden bridges, so that music perfectly encapsulates the setting that you're in. and makes you feel like, well, if I fall, I'm dead. Shit.
Love the entire soundtrack. Like all of the action stages have this, you know, you're a god bringing down Rex's fury on these demons, and thunderbolts are striking in the background, and you're kicking some butt kind of vibe to it. But I just love the gift of music so much.
That's the one when they first discover music, right? And it just plays over.
It's this, and maybe it was just because, you know, I was a kid, and it was maybe the first game I played where, like, it has this emotional drama, like people are dying and you're trying to save them kind of stuff. And then now there's this somber, slow, beautiful waltz that comes in into the game that when else do you hear that in a game? And even the game frames it as this great gift that you're spreading to the people and they're stopping the fighting because this music is just so fantastic.
Yeah.
They tie it in well with the story.
I noticed, you know, kind of a attachment to the people. Like, you really start to care for them and you, like, care for their stories, even though they're pretty much completely faceless. Because, you know, something always, like, really stuck with me is... wasn't it the one character was, like, lost in the desert?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. He's dehydrated, and they tell you, please go and try and bring him stuff.
Yeah.
By the time you get there, it turns out he's already dead.
They don't have any faces, but, you know, you get sad despite that. And that's exactly where the gift of music really kind of plays into that whole thing.
Yeah, they wrote the song because of that guy's loss in the desert.
Right. It's so ahead of its time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not just lemmings to do your whim. They're lemmings with feelings, and that's all the difference.
Yeah, and the one in particular that kind of going along with that is the that son, Teddy, I think, running away from his family, and you hear, you know, the you know, they put the thing I liked in that whole part was they were like, well, you know, we thought he was a boy, but really he made this decision as a young man. Which, that, you know, like you said, Sobo, it's lemons, lemons with feelings. So
exactly.
Yeah.
They are your mindless drones, but you're their gods. So you got to care about
them. Yeah. So go give him some bread while he's in a cave somewhere.
Now, I'm pretty sure Teddy is the only character in the entire game that even has a name assigned to him.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
He is the chosen child.
The one that got me was the very first story where, you know, you're actually directly talking to the guy and he's like, oh, Kami-sama, I've been having these visions. I think I have a special gift that I want to help the people with. And then, you know, at the end, he gets sick. He gets cursed by that world's boss and he passes away. And I don't know, that just really, that impacted me more than maybe the other stories. Maybe because it was the first one, but also because I was directly interacting with him. And, you know, he basically gave his life to save the rest of the people in his town.
And I love that, and the little let us listen altar scene, they don't replace it with another male villager that comes in and takes his place.
Yeah, it's empty square, and that really drives it home.
Yeah.
So ahead of its time, you know, just... especially just, like, addressing death. You know?
That guy, was it in Bloodpool, where he asks to be rained on with his master's tears before he dies?
I think that was Eitos.
Okay. Yeah, that was a pretty intense, not intense, moving moment.
Yeah, and, like, he got injured sealing a monster's lair, and, you know, he think he might be okay for a while, and then it turns out, oh, he's not going to make it.
I was going to ask everyone what their favorite moments are, but I don't know if we just covered it or not. Does anyone have any other moments that they really liked? That they'd like
there's
to...
There's one thing I wanted to bring up we haven't touched on.
Sure.
And that's part of the actual ending of the game.
Mm-hmm.
I wish I would have written something more down about this because I don't know it in too well detail now after playing it a couple weeks ago, but it kind of brings up some questions in the ending about like religion. And it kind of says, do people need to follow this, or or is this just something they choose to do? Or it kind of asks you whether or not it's something that people need, or if it's just something that's there for them. And it's something that I don't think like any game at that time even tried to touch or tackle, and obviously it was censored out a lot, but I thought it was really unique that they kind of asked some general questions with that, just to get you thinking a little bit about it at the end of the game.
Nintendo's pretty known for like relentlessly cutting out religious things, especially in the U.S., especially in this. They replaced the cross with the skull and crossbones.
Yeah, and they deleted the Eye of Providence. Is that what it's called?
Yeah, which I don't think most people even know that's supposed to be a symbol for God.
Yeah, I didn't know until...
Where is the present? I'm not sure. Is that the...
Is that on the, it's on the pyramid.
It's the eye on top of the pyramid.
That symbol on the back of the dollar bill.
Yeah.
They couldn't remove all of it without completely restructuring, like...
I was going to say, the whole thing is basically built around that concept.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think as long as you're not naming an actual specific religion, they don't care.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
And considering like early 90s Nintendo and just everyone else trying to bring religious-based games with a religious content in it, originally it was God and Satan, that it was the Abrahamic God.
Yeah.
But, Nintendo's like, no, we don't want to have problems with that, so we're just going to make him the master because he's the master of this fantasy world. And some...
So that makes it worse, but that's...
That's awesome, though, because that way they won't get in trouble with the Catholic Church or anybody else. Hey, they're protecting their own asses, which I guess was important at the time. But the ending, I can't remember. Was it the first game or the second game where at the end of it you just watch the statue gradually become like forgotten and falling apart? And like
that was the second one.
That was the second one. Okay.
Yeah, it gets covered in snow, and like I think the wings start to crumble off and stuff.
Yeah, because that had a tone forward as far as like, oh well, I guess people don't need him anymore or anything. Once God, and the same thing with the first one, they're all happy, the world's all fine. It gets to the point where humanity has been helped so much by God and by themselves, like they've become enlightened. Is God even really needed? Do we even need religion? And then you also have to ask, well, if his whole goal was to make them like that, isn't he happy even though he's no longer there? Is spiritual enlightenment a point where you don't need to ask some divine being for help and you just rely on yourself or some nonsense?
Yeah.
It's very metaphysical.
I went and looked it up just now while you were talking. That's pretty much what it says, is that sort of stuff. So,
yeah.
Like, are they happier without it, or now that they don't need it anymore?
Which I would like to think they're happier not being picked up by a giant bat.
I have a house burned by consistently it. Burning their towns and they're suffering from plagues and stuff.
Whee!
Yeah, that better.
It's a little off topic, but how does the second one tie into it? You're the same character. Is there... I don't even know what the background story is to the second one.
I mean, there's some debate over whether it's a prequel or not, but I think the ending with the statue crumbling as it's forgotten would make it pretty definitively a sequel instead of a prequel.
But at the same time, the character doesn't look the same. Maybe that statue crumbled, and then he had to take over this other statue.
Let's see, the second game, there's already people populating the world, but they just need help because they've been corrupted by the seven sends. So that probably, I think that would even more point to it being a sequel, since at the end of the first game, you brought in a world that was completely empty, and now it's full of people, and everyone's happy and living well.
But wasn't the world, like, didn't the demons clear out that world so that the people were all gone?
Yeah.
Is that kind of the backstory?
That's what the Wikipedia said when I kind of skimmed it, that it used to be populated, and then the Tanzra,
yeah,
whatever, like, turned them all into the bats and stuff.
Which is kind of like Soul Blazer also.
Yeah, exactly.
So, I guess it could even be a cycle between the two games over and over.
Oh, jeez.
Well, Drum, you're getting very metaphysical with this, man.
Actually, I saw when I was looking up that stuff, the guy that made Final Fantasy My Life as a King, that WiiWare launch title, little city builder game, he expressed interest in making another ActRaiser game in like 08.
Whoa.
Oh, man.
That would have been awesome.
Obviously, nothing's come of that since.
Oh, that's unfortunate.
No!
I was looking him up because I'd never heard of him before, and apparently that was the only game I could find he's even been credited with, so he's probably not a guy with a lot of pull.
Yeah. I mean, there's been some spiritual successors, I guess. Arguably, the Dark Cloud games could be considered a spiritual successor. Well,
they are. Yeah.
I've never played those. Frame as that, like, back in the day, it was always kind of Sony's Zelda killer, which always made it me like,
yeah.
That's no Zelda it's killer. It's
like an ActRaiser successor. My interest is peached now.
Yeah, you should definitely check out, like, I don't know how the first one is, but you should definitely play the second one.
I've completed the first one, Corey. It reeks of launch PS2 era style, and everything that's bad about it or good about it is improved upon for the second one.
Yeah.
So it's, I mean, unless you want, like, oh, look at all these fun things that were in the first game or blah, blah, this and that, that happens in the second one, just play the second. Second one's great. Second one's fantastic.
So does anybody have any closing thoughts or anything else that they would like to add to the conversation?
I just want to say Yuzo Koshiro is the man.
Oh, yes.
That is all.
Drop the mic. All right. Well, thanks for joining me, guys. I really appreciate it. And we'll see everyone next month with Mark of the Ninja.
Oh, looking forward to that.
Yeah, me too.
ActRaiser 3, believe.
Heaven and in Jesus and the saints. and all the prophets, and yeah, yeah, God is great, yeah, yeah, God is good, yeah, 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 yeah. What if God was one of us, just a slob like one of us, just a stranger on the bus trying to make his way home, trying to make his way home, back up to heaven. Except for the Pope may be in.